This is Amarins.
Just got home from Illinois. Locked the front door, oh boy. Got to sit down, take a rest on the porch. Imagination sets in. Pretty soon I'm singing. Doo, 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 looking out my back door. This giant doing car.
Hi again, and welcome to Amarins Podcast, episode 63. It's Tuesday, January 15th, 2008. I'm back. Did you miss me? I missed doing my podcast, to be honest, and I'm certainly glad to be back. I hope you had good holidays and that the new year started well for you. Now, today I'm going to tell you a bit about my recent trip to the U.S., then later on, after comments, I have a brief personal update, followed by all the usual contact details and all those kinds of things. Now, I've called today's episode Home from Home, and what that means, basically, is that I'm back home from my home. I've said before that for me, as an expat, America is my home, the place I belong without question as a birthright. And New Zealand is my home by choice, the place I've chosen to live and build my life. Now, what all that means in practice is that I feel at home in both places, but it also means that I sometimes look at both countries with a foreigner's eyes, which can be a little disorienting when you look at something you've always known and it looks different somehow, but I guess that goes with the territory. I last visited the U.S. 8 years ago, when Nigel and I went on holiday with Nigel's cousin. We had a great time, and as I said earlier, or have said several times, I think, we never intended to wait so long before going back. But to recap for those of you who missed it, this all came up really suddenly because I found out that I needed to go to Chicago and deal with the things that I had stored there, the various things I left behind when I moved here in 1995. I had left the things at a friend's house, and the deal was that they could stay there as long as they were in the house, and they were actually moving, so I had to go there and deal with it once and for all. Now, I never would have chosen to go to Illinois in winter. I hate cold, snowy winters, which is one of the reasons I don't live in Illinois anymore. But and I also certainly never would have gone by myself, because the fact of the matter is that Nigel and I have never been apart more than a couple of days in all these 12 years, and certainly not for 2 weeks, and with us in different hemispheres, because I was in the northern hemisphere and the western hemisphere, and he's in the southern hemisphere and the eastern hemisphere, so it was all too far away and too long. But as soon as I got to America, I bought one of those disposable cell phones, a prepay from Virgin Mobile. And we used that to be able to communicate. Basically, he would send me a text message, and then I would say, are you ready to talk? And I'd say, yeah, I'd text back. And then he would ring me on my friend's landline because it was a lot cheaper. And but still, that did mean that he could reach me if he needed to. And we weren't like incommunicado. So that all worked pretty well, but all the same, it was expensive, and I would have rather have been with him. But be that as it was, I was going to say I was unusually good at psyching myself up for this trip, fortunately, so that I could focus on what I needed to do, because, you know, I had to go through all this stuff, and it could be a big job. But on the whole, everything went well. My siblings picked up some heirlooms that needed to stay in the family, and I picked up a few things I wanted to bring back. But therein lay the first problem. I had arranged for Allied, which is an international moving company, goes by different names in different places, to meet me to quote on shipping things back to New Zealand. I wasn't going to bring everything for two reasons. One, because I knew I didn't want it all, and secondly, because I knew it was expensive. I'd heard some people paying $15,000 to $20,000 US to ship a houseload to New Zealand, and I certainly didn't want to spend that kind of money, but I also didn't want to bring stuff here just to have to get rid of it once it got here. So I wanted them to do a smaller amount. It's sometimes called lift van or lift truck. I've heard it called both. Essentially, it's a custom-built crate where they pack everything up. It's about 500 pounds of weight, and they ship it either by air or by sea, depending on the price. So I had arranged for them to come and check it out and quote about that. Now, I've blogged about all this pretty extensively, so by all means, you can go to my blog, amarins.com, to get the full lowdown. But the important thing is that they never got the quote to me, and no one returned my emails or my phone calls. So I had to resort to plan B, which was to take only what I could fit into suitcases. Now, you're entitled to have two suitcases and a carry-on when you're flying internationally across the Pacific. And so I knew I could have two suitcases, and I would just get some more. So I went and bought some more suitcases at Target. I didn't need anything that was too flash or too good, just something to do the job. And I also bought a bathroom scale so that I could check the weight, because you're limited to 23 kilograms, which is roughly 50 pounds. So now, you know, I'd spent days going through things, and I set aside things with the expectation that Allied would be moving it for me. So when I realized that they weren't going to be doing that, I had to go through it all again, and again, and again, until I got it to fit into the suitcases. Now, here's the thing about all this. How do you decide quickly, under pressure, what you can discard and what you don't want to live without? The nearest analogy that I can think of is if you're about to be evacuated and you need to pick what to save, and, you know, that kind of thing. Now, in my case, whatever I left behind was just going to end up in the rubbish. So that it is, in a lot of ways, like you're when you're about to be evacuated before some sort of natural disaster, because you lose whatever's left behind. So by the time my suitcases were packed, I was feeling a bit sick, I have to say. There was a lot I was leaving behind, including a lot I didn't want to. But I had no choice by that point. My brother came and picked me up to take me to my hometown for a few days, spend some time with my family. And this was a good thing, because by then I felt that the sooner that I got away from there and didn't see the stuff I was leaving, the sooner I could forget about it and start to feel better, you know, sort of a out of sight, out of mind. But the worst part of the trip wasn't the packing, wasn't the sorting, wasn't this being essentially let down by Allied. It was air travel, specifically United Airlines. Their service was appalling. I had to wait in line at LAX in Los Angeles for an hour, just under an hour, just to check in, and it wasn't a long line either. In Chicago, when I started heading home, my flight was delayed 2.5 hours, which meant I'd miss my flight to Auckland, and there's only one flight a day from San Francisco to Auckland. So I waited in line for 2 hours with hundreds of other United, United's victims, but they were basically people whose flights had been delayed or canceled. And so I waited in this line and rebooked through to Los Angeles, where there's a later flight to Auckland. And they assured me that my bags would follow me on the same plane, but I was a bit worried when the agent asked me to describe them. You can see this coming, I bet. My bags didn't follow me to Auckland, so I ended up arriving home not only without the things that I was planning on bringing back, you know, the whole reason for the trip, but also without the stuff I'd brought with me, so I actually had less that I left with. I was not amused. Now, the Air New Zealand staff that I dealt with, check-in agents, in-flight crew, even the lost baggage people, they were all very friendly, professional, they seemed efficient. I have no complaints about the people I dealt with. However, the baggage tracking system, they have a website that you can check, and they have a voice-activated phone system that you can use. I felt that both of those were really inadequate, especially because there didn't seem to be any way to get through to a real person to find out what's going on, what the status is, where the bags are. Are they looking everywhere? I thought that was pretty bad. The flight over from Auckland to Los Angeles was delayed 3 hours because they were repairing a de-icing unit. Now, I thought that was kind of important, so I was willing to let that one go. And Air New Zealand also messed up my meals on the way over. I had ordered special meals, and the dinner was missing some things, but that was all right. I didn't mind that so much. But the breakfast, not only was it wrong, it actually had things in it that I'm not supposed to have. Now, I don't have a food allergy or anything, so this wasn't like a life or death situation. But what if it had been? You know, it's just, they've got to be more careful about that sort of thing. So I've got some minor complaints with Air New Zealand, but on the whole, Air New Zealand was good. The trouble is that in my mind, Air New Zealand seems outstanding only because United Airlines was so appallingly bad. I can't imagine flying United again, not unless I had no other alternative. And if I did, I would insist on picking up my bags at the destination and rechecking them myself, not relying on United to do it. Although I've since heard that other airlines are worse, like Delta apparently loses bags every flight, but maybe I'm wrong. That's just what I've been told. But I don't know. It took 3 days for my luggage to show up. And when it did arrive, it was a little bit worse for the journey. A couple of the suitcases had pretty significant damage, but I considered myself lucky to see them at all. So I ignored that, and I also ignored the fact that one item in the bag was broken. And actually, that was a bag that the TSA had opened to check whatever it is they check for, I don't know. And of course, they never put anything back properly, and so that particular thing, which had been wrapped carefully, became unwrapped and was broken in transit. And actually, one of the souvenirs I brought back was 3 cans of pumpkin for making pie, because you can't get that here, as I've said before. So I got 3 cans, they were on special, and the 3 cans were very dented. And probably tomorrow I'm going to post a photo of them on my blog, amrens.com, so you can have a look for yourself. But despite all that, I had a great time visiting people. I spent some time with old friends and family, and we had literally a lot of laughs. It really was fun, despite it all. During this trip, I got to meet Tom, a.k.a. the Ramble Redhead, and his lovely man, Joe. Tom is the first podcaster that I met in real life, which is kind of cool for me. And while I was there, I recorded a brief sound clip with him, and I'm going to play that right now. Well, I'm here with Tom the Ramble Redhead and his lovely partner, Joe, and we've just had lunch, and we've had a walk around a very cold Chicago. And that's the GPS telling us where to go. What's your GPS's name, Tom?
I don't have a name. I'm not like the other podcasters.
You don't? Well, that'll be the next contest. Name your GPS.
Yeah. How about...
Oh, bitch! No, just
that's all.
You should call it Riley.
Riley?
Yeah, because it's Riley, Riley good.
Oh, you're bad. You're bad. You're picking on me.
No, I wouldn't do that.
No.
No, but we've had a nice time together, I think.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, and it's been lovely to meet you guys.
Yeah, you too.
And Tom is now officially the first podcaster I've ever met.
Yay!
In real life, that is, because obviously I've met people online.
Yeah.
So, that's good. But, I just wanted to do a quick little recording in Chicago and say how good it was to meet you guys and to let people know that it really did happen.
Yeah, and we have pictures.
And we have pictures to prove it, which will eventually be on my website because the audio will probably be up first.
Yeah.
So, but thanks, guys.
Well, you're very welcome.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, you're welcome. And I love you also. You're the man.
Thanks. And I will no doubt be talking to you when I get back to New Zealand, too.
Yay!
Okay. I'd like to thank Tom and Joe for that. I did have a lovely day with them. And I do have photos, but I'm going to be posting them tomorrow as well. And I'm not going to get a chance to do that today, I don't think. So, but anyway, yeah, Tom and Joe are great guys, and I did have a lovely time with them. And actually, for Tom's perspective on that day, you can listen to the Ramble Redhead Show, episode 184. I had to write it down. on a side note, in Tom's episode, he mentioned a little fun thing that I bought for Nigel, which normally would have been fine, since Tom released it after I arrived back in New Zealand. However, since my bags were late, I was worried that Nigel would listen to it before I was able to give him the gift. As it happens, it didn't happen, so it didn't matter. But for a day or so, I was sweating a little bit, thinking, oh my God, he's going to hear it, and he'll know what I got him. So the trip is over, and I can say that everything I own is in New Zealand. And that hasn't been true for the past 12 years, and to be honest, it feels a bit weird. The stuff has been a constant backdrop to my life here. It was always there, whether I thought about it or not. But it's also been kind of a weight, more like an anchor, I guess, holding me back. I always knew that I'd have to deal with it someday, though I didn't think it would be so quickly or under such pressure. But over the years, there were times I held off buying a book or a CD or something because I thought to myself, I have that in Chicago. And of course now, if I don't have it here, I don't have it at all. And in some ways, it's really liberating. I can concentrate fully on my life and what I'm doing without trying to find a time and a way to deal with all the stuff I left behind. Now, I still have human connections, of course, family and friends and so on. But people move around, and that's something that my stuff didn't do. I don't know. The human connections aren't a chain, I don't think. You know, they're just sort of a connection, whereas the stuff I left behind was. So I guess that's why it makes me feel so much lighter to be without it. And there are plenty of times, especially when I was going through things, that I think that Henry David Thoreau was right, that we should never have more possessions than we carry on our backs. But that's not really practical for most of us, because our stuff helps us form our safe space, our refuge from the world. And I think that that's valuable. Maybe it's even embedded deep in the human psyche, I don't know. But at any rate, all my stuff and I are in the same place for the first time in a dozen years. So that pretty much is that for that whole episode. But I thought I would share with you some random impressions. Now, again, I've posted some observations and things on my blog, both when I was in Chicago and since I've been back. But there's a few things I thought I would highlight. The thing that surprised me the most were prices. Because in other times when we've come to the U.S., the New Zealand dollar was weaker against the U.S. dollar. Of course, most foreign currencies are pretty strong against the U.S. dollar right now. And it's never been as good as it is now when we've been there. It's roughly, the New Zealand dollar is worth roughly 77 U.S. cents when I was there. And that was great. I mean, it was a good exchange rate. But it didn't buy as much as it did in previous years. In previous years, when it was maybe more like 70 U.S. cents, we would load up on things because things were so cheap. But this time, most of the things that I looked at were comparably priced. Once you figure the exchange rate, it was comparably priced to what I would pay here in New Zealand for the same or similar items. Now, there were some exceptions. You could buy bulk packs of underwear and socks and things like that, and we don't get those here, generally speaking. So those were really good value. But things like shirts, I only had 5 long sleeve shirts when I went to the U.S. Of course, I was there for about 2 weeks, so I needed to go buy some. And I went over to the Target, and the shirts that I saw there were, as I said, about the same price that I would pay here in New Zealand for a comparable shirt. So I ended up going to the sale racks and finding ones that were about half price. And those were a bit more competitive, slightly cheaper than I would pay here. But the main thing, of course, is that because I bought them there, I'm unlikely to see them on people here, if you know what I mean. Because we don't have the same stores, and so we don't have the same fashion. And it's not a consideration necessarily, but it is kind of nice knowing that I'm not going to go anywhere where somebody else is wearing the same thing. But I also found that true in technology. Now, I went to Best Buy, and I noticed that they had all of the flat panel televisions, the LCDs and the plasmas, were high definition. And we don't have high definition in New Zealand yet, so that was very different. And the prices were roughly comparable to what we would pay for non-HD. It's probably a bit higher, actually. I didn't look at any of the stereo components and those kinds of things because, I mean, it's pretty much the same wherever you go. Digital cameras were roughly comparable. The digital SLRs, which is what I was interested in, were actually more expensive than they are in New Zealand. And I think the reason for that is that we don't have any import duties on cameras. So cameras are fairly inexpensive here to start out with. And I think that may have something to do with it. I don't know. I was surprised at how expensive some of the technology was when I bought my iMac and I was getting ready to upgrade to Leopard. I bought a MyBook, a 1 terabyte external hard drive, and I was going to use half of it as my Time Machine backup. The hard drive was roughly the same price in the U.S. as it was here in New Zealand, and that surprised me. But what surprised me even more was the last full day I was in Illinois. My brother took me to a Barnes & Noble store because I wanted to go to a big U.S. bookstore. And I was looking at the prices, and again, they were the same or even higher than I would pay in New Zealand. Now, this particularly surprised me because I'd always thought that books were really expensive in New Zealand, and I still think they are. But if you're talking about reasonably recent books, not necessarily bestsellers or, you know, featured books, but books that have been released in the past few months, they were very often more expensive in the U.S. than they are here in New Zealand. And I was almost dumbfounded by that because of what I had expected, I suppose. Most of the other things that I saw, they're fairly minor. And as I said, I have blogged fairly extensively about all of this sort of stuff. But what I thought I would share with you instead of that, because you can go and read it if you're really interested in some of the things I saw, what struck me the most is the times when I felt everything was really foreign. And the first time I really felt that was on the first day I was there. I was walking to the Best Buy and Target and all that, and I was walking across the car park, and this car came in, and it was an older car, but he had, to me it was an enormous flag, must have been 11 by 17 or whatever your measurement is, flag fluttering attached to a pole that was affixed to the rear driver's side passenger window, so basically semi-permanently. And I thought, how weird, because in New Zealand, the only time you ever see anything like that is if there's some sort of big sporting event on and people put sports banners on their cars, but it's for a very short period of time. And some of these cars had flags on them, and they'd been there for obviously quite a long time. And I noticed wandering down residential streets that there had been flagpoles. The flagpoles have been installed in the yard, you know, the kind that are fixed, you know, vertical ones that are fixed to the ground. And I remember the houses from before and that they didn't have flagpoles in the old days. And they were everywhere. And in my hometown, there would be people who just put out the flags like you would on the 4th of July. And they'd obviously been there for quite a while because they're faded and tatty and so on, which breaks flag etiquette, by the way. But I was really kind of not taken aback by that exactly, but it felt really strange because when I lived in the U.S. and when I was last there, that sort of thing didn't happen. And it just looked odd to me. It looked a bit over the top. And so that struck me. And in the suburbs, outside of Chicago, I noticed all of these cars with these enormous ribbon stickers on their cars, usually yellow, saying something about support our troops and all that kind of thing. But I didn't see those so much in the city. In fact, I don't remember seeing them in Chicago itself, only in the suburbs. So I have no idea what that's all about, but it took me back a bit too, because I don't know. If you're a longtime listener to this podcast, or if you've read my blog, you'll know that I sometimes have issues with this over-the-top display of patriotism. I'm not talking about being patriotic. I'm talking about displays of patriotism, because a lot of times it's not backed up with substance or backed up appropriately. It's this rah-rah, go sports team kind of patriotism instead of an authentic patriotism, if that makes any sense. I hope so, and maybe at some point I can elaborate on what I mean by that. But basically, it really looked weird to me, and there's no other way to put it. I'm afraid it just looked weird. But having said all that, when I was in Chicago and when I was in my hometown, I looked around, and yes, I could see that things had changed. I could see a building that had been built or where one was gone and that kind of thing. But everything looked pretty much familiar. I mean, I basically knew where I was, and nothing looked strange to me. It looked like I could find my way around without any great problem. The only place where that wasn't the case was down in Boys Town, the gay area down around Halsted between, say, Belmont and Irving Park in Chicago. There, especially north of Addison, north of about Buckingham, there had been substantial changes, enough that there were places I didn't recognize anymore. And there was one corner up by Cornelian Halsted. I was looking to the northwest. If somebody had plopped me in that corner blindfolded and taken the blindfold away, I wouldn't have had a clue where I was. And that was also even true north of Addison, probably even more so. And all of that has just been in the past 8 years, these things that I'm talking about. And it felt really weird because I used to live in that neighborhood. I used to work in that neighborhood. I used to spend a lot of time in that neighborhood. And to see it look so completely different in only 8 years, it was really, really disorienting and almost a bit shocking to me. Because that felt far more different than anywhere else that I was in this entire trip, including my hometown, which I haven't lived in since 1983, I think, or thereabouts. Yeah, 1983. So however long that is, 25 years. That didn't even look as different and odd to me as that stretch of Halsted did. Go figure. Now, Chicago, I didn't go out at all in Chicago, apart from going to a hamburger joint called Hamburger Mary's, which is basically a gay hamburger joint. And I think it started in Hawaii, if I remember correctly. And they have sort of a little bar upstairs called Mary's Attic, I think it is. So that's the closest I came to actually going out the whole time I was there. I mean, that's not what I was there for, so I wasn't going to be a creature of the night or anything. So I can't comment at all on what nightlife is like now. I'm told that it's completely different from when I lived there 12 years ago. But, you know, I've got to take people's word for that because I don't know. But it is obvious that the gay publications have been affected by things like Manhunt and online hookups and things like that, because the amount of ads is down fairly dramatically. There are virtually no personals. Craigslist has killed off a free weekly newspaper in Chicago called The Reader. There's a few others around the country. When I lived there, it was made up of four sections, each of them 54 pages. Now the whole publication is less than 54 pages, and it's much smaller. So it's essentially decimated the independent publishing world in Chicago, at least in the so-called alternative communities. And I found that a bit sad, really, that it faded so much in that period of time. Mind you, the gay newspaper in New Zealand called Express often has struggled as well, partly for advertisers, but also for distribution and so on, because, but our situation is different because, you know, civil rights are fully protected, we have civil unions, all those kinds of things. There isn't quite the community, kind of the ghetto-ish community that there used to be, at least in many parts of America, and along Boys Town in Chicago in particular. But I don't know. Things change. People change. Everything changes, I guess. And but it was North Halsted in particular that where I noticed those changes most keenly and felt them most keenly. Now, I'm going to move on to comments. And first up, I have an audio comment to play.
Hey, Arthur, this is Ramble. Just want to leave you a quick message. It's now 2008, my time, and it'll be close enough for you soon because you're in Chicago. But I just wanted to wish you the very, very best for 2008, and I just wanted you to keep up with a great show, and it was wonderful to meet you, and I really hope you have the best for the year. Okay? Take care. Bye.
Thanks for that, Tom. And by the way, do feel free to leave an audio comment at any time, 206-339-8413. If I don't get an audio comment once every 30 days, then I lose the number. So sooner or later, you're bound to hear a message from myself reminding people to call. But I only need one call a month, so you might be the lucky caller. Now, going to the comments, this is from episode 62, Holiday Time, which was my last episode from last year. And I had two comments, and first was Archer, who said, besides the weather and a few other small details, Christmas down there isn't all that different from Christmas here. I would say it's probably like the difference between Christmas in the north and south here. Either way, Merry Christmas, Happy Boxing Day, and of course, Happy New Year's. Have a safe trip to the U.S. And next was Brian from Rochester, who said, hi, Arthur. I know you're in the USA now, but wanted to comment. This show, to me, was extremely interesting. I've enjoyed all your shows, but this one I enjoyed the most so far. I wanted to cry at the end when you were saying goodbye. Hope all is well and see you in 2008. And I said, thanks, guys. I'm back home now, and so much time has passed that responding seems a little silly now. But I do appreciate you taking the time to comment. And of course, I always appreciate when somebody takes the time to comment. But about that, I completely agree with Archer that, and in fact, I think I've said this in various places, that from my perspective, the difference between the Christmas that I grew up with and the Christmas I have here is basically only the difference between Christmas in Chicago and, say, Christmas in maybe Southern California or Hawaii or something like that. It's just, it all has to do with where you grew up. And the reason why New Zealand Christmases and New Year's are so different for me and so shocking for me is precisely because I grew up in a cold climate. And if I'd grown up in a warmer climate, it would be no big deal to me. But be that as it may. And I'm also glad to say that Brian has resumed podcasting. It's called My Gay Two Cents. There is a link on my blog, of course. And he just had his New Year's episode out with his partner, and which I enjoyed thoroughly. And the other things I wanted to tell you about is my Frapper map. Now, I haven't talked about it in a long time, mostly because I keep forgetting. But I had to remember because Fairy Princess Holly has added a Frapper map to her blog, and she also added herself to my Frapper map. So welcome, Holly. And I've, of course, put myself on Holly's map as well, as you do. And that actually brings me to iTunes reviews in a roundabout sort of way. Now, I was hyping that extensively just before Christmas. And, of course, I do appreciate every review I've gotten. Now, I checked today, and apparently I have 13 reviews now. The 13th review I can't actually read yet because it's not moderated or whatever it is they do to it. They vet them before they actually post them. But apparently I have 13 reviews, and I don't know what the 13th is yet. But the 11th review was Eric from Confessions of a Southern Boy in Yankee Land, and that review put me just outside of the first page of the iTunes store of personal journals category. And the reason that that's an issue is because if somebody hits that page, then obviously they'll see the badge for my show. And theoretically, I might pick up some new listeners from that. But I don't know, take that for what it's worth. But since then, Fairy Princess Holly has also added a review. So that was my 12th review, and I'm just waiting to see what this 13th is. And all of that's very exciting. It's that I'm just outside of the front page. I'm at number 16, so just outside of that. But it does help with where the podcast pops up in the listings, particularly if somebody does a search for my name, where it comes up, because there's also a bunch of if you've ever done this on iTunes, you'll know what I mean. There is a karaoke company that calls Amber Itz with a T, and they very often come up before me in various countries. Well, the more reviews I have, the less likely that is to happen, and the more likely that my podcast will be somewhere near the top. Now, my big announcement, I should have a drum roll, please. That's my drum roll. I have my first non-US review. Scotty in Australia has added an iTunes review in the Australian iTunes store. So I have my very first non-US review, and I'm very excited about that. Thank you, Scotty. And that actually helped raise my, not my ranking exactly, but where I fall in that search listing I was talking about in the Australian store. And all of this helps in other countries as well, because here in New Zealand, I have no reviews in New Zealand. But nevertheless, I'm ranked highly when somebody does a search for Amerinds, which is half the battle, I suppose. And this year, I do hope to concentrate more on a bit of promotion to try to, you know, get more listeners and try to make things happen a bit. But if you've ever thought, oh, I really should do a review, now's the time to do it, believe me, because it will help me get my goal of higher rankings. It would be lovely to be on the front page of the iTunes store in the US. I mean, I'm not going to pretend otherwise. I would love that. But the main thing, the main goal is still that I enlisted higher if somebody does a search for Amerinds, so that it's not buried beneath all of these silly karaoke. Now, let me rephrase that. I don't think karaoke is silly. Nigel has a karaoke system here that we use at all family gatherings, but I just don't like being buried in the middle of all that stuff. That's all I'm trying to say. And so in that sense, I'm calling it silly. Does that make any sense? Well, maybe not. I also have a couple of updates on guests from previous Amerinds podcast episodes. Yorkie from episode 30, I received an email from him, and he and his partner are settling in the UK, doing well. Just thought I'd pass it on. And also Mark from Slap Upside the Head from episode 51 now has a Facebook page where you can sign up as a fan, and of course I have. And he also has a guest book, which you can sign in. And you can access all of that through his site, which is slapupsidethehead.com. And there's always a link on my blog under blogs that I read. And, of course, I'm a big fan, huge fan of Slap Upside the Head. And if you're a member of Facebook, then you might want to become a fan of his as well. I think I was one of the early fans. I'm not sure. As soon as I found out about it, I went over there and made myself a fan, which actually reminds me. I am on Facebook, Twitter, MySpace, all those kinds of things. There are links in my blog. By all means, friend me on any of those things. Most of them, in fact, I think all of them, I have to approve them. But, I mean, the only ones I don't approve generally are from those female prostitutes on MySpace and spam ones on some of the others. But by all means, friend me. I'm always looking for more friends. Aren't we all? And also Amerinds on AIM, iChat, and Skype. I think must have been December. My head is a bit fuzzy about dates right now, as you might imagine, with the changing hemispheres. But I think it was in December. A listener contacted me on AIM when I was signed on one day. And we only had a few minutes to chat, but I thought it was really cool that I had this brief opportunity to talk with this listener that I hadn't talked to before. So if you're on any of those services, Facebook, Twitter, MySpace, AIM, which is also iChat, or Skype, by all means, find me and add me. I'm always willing to have more friends. I mean, I think most of us are. And it seems to me there was something else that I wanted to tell you about, but it'll have to wait, I think, because I'm already passing 35 minutes, I think. So I think I'll just wrap it up for here for today. To let you know, I am back with a vengeance, and I survived my U.S. trip, sometimes maybe a bit barely, but I did survive, and I'm back. And tomorrow I'm going to be posting just a couple of photos from related to that trip. Oh, I just remembered what it was I wanted to tell you. And that's that I was really sad to hear while I was away that the Little Fatty Cast is ending production. I really enjoyed it, and I'm gonna miss it quite a lot. But all the best to Big Fatty and to Mr. Larry H. Vader. Thank you very much for entertaining me as you did. And, of course, they're both welcome on my podcast anytime, especially Big Fatty, because he's going to have nowhere else to go. But I was also sad to hear of the demise of PodcastSoup.net. I found a lot of great podcasts through that site, and I don't know where I'm going to find them now. But I certainly wish Mike Hipp all the best in the future. And thank you very much, Mike, for having provided that service, because, as I said, I did find it really useful. But that is it for this episode of the Amerinds Podcast. You can leave a comment on my blog, amerinds.com, or you can send an email to me at amerinds@yahoo.com, and you can ring my U.S. listener line, which is 206-339-8413. And I did say that I was going to have a little personal update, and that's simply that Monday, the 21st, is my 49th birthday. I just passed that along for what it's worth. I am not soliciting birthday greetings, so don't think that I am. I'm just passing it along because it's probably going to be the subject of my Tuesday podcast. And that is it for this episode. I will talk to you again on Friday. Have a great week, everybody. Bye.